Hello, college football fans. Welcome to episode 172 of College Football Throwdown. I'm your co-host, Alex Schmitz, and today I'm joined, as always, by my dad, Peter Schmitz.
Hello, Husker fans and college football fans.
Yes, we are a father-son duo here to talk about college football by college football fans for college football fans. And on this episode, we'll be focusing specifically on the Nebraska Cornhuskers and what's kind of been going on since our last podcast in January. It's been an eventful spring for the Huskers, and we have our upcoming spring game in just a week's time as we're recording here on April 19th. So there's a lot to catch us all up on.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, I guess it would be nice if we did them, you know, more regularly than this, but you know what? We have lives.
There was a big event in March where we were planning on doing a podcast, but various events delayed us, but we're getting into it now. And if you're right here for more of the national conversation, please listen to episode 171, which we just finished recording, which is about some of the more national topics in the world of college football. Because we just did a podcast, we're going to go ahead and skip our traditional beverage and just dive right into the conversation.
Yeah, because I'm still drinking it.
Okay, well, I've already finished. I'm ready for a second. The big news I'm referring to from March is, of course, the departure of our athletic director, Trev Albers, which took, I know, a lot of Husker Nation by surprise. He is now the athletic director at Texas A&M. And, of course, after that was announced, you know, there was lots of news stories flying this, where, and that, you know, trying to explain the reasonings as to why. And, you know, as kind of happened, right, like we've seen it happen in the past with Scott Frost and with other coaches and athletic directors in the past. Like, once the gentleman in question leaves, you know, people are more willing to open their mouths and talk about various things that they may not have been happy about. But, you know, it came as a shock to me, certainly being a little bit more of a casual fan, you know, not knowing all the specifics and not following the forums and stuff, because it seems like, you know, he's made some great hires, right, in terms of getting Matt Rhule on board and, you know, starting to gather funding to make a big renovation to the football stadium itself, opening up our new practice facility, the Frank Solich practice facility for the football league, you know, and then overseeing this good period in our sports where we obviously continuing to do well in volleyball. We had a great year for basketball, both on the men's and women's sides this past season. So my impression before the announcement was that Trev was doing a good job and that the vibes were generally good, but that didn't seem to be the reality.
Well, and, you know, interestingly, as you were kind of, checking off the list of all the things that he did or was involved in doing, one of the most significant things that he did while he was our athletic director was the volleyball day in Nebraska and yes, pulling off the 92,000 people in a football stadium, excuse me, to watch a volleyball game, a women's sporting event, you know, all that. I mean, he did some amazing things. He was a great athletic director for us. There's no doubt in my mind about that, Alex, and I will continue to say that. Okay. It was a loss for the University of Nebraska that we were not able to retain his services. I think he has, but I think it's also apparent now, in hindsight, that I have to acknowledge that it was likely that he wasn't long for Nebraska anyway. I think he has bigger plans. He has he's obviously an ambitious guy, and he allowed himself to get frustrated very quickly by the slow machination of the, you know, political process of replacing leadership in an academic institution, and it caused him enough consternation that he had his head up on a swivel looking for other opportunities. And when A&M conveniently popped and became available, that's a school that has almost unlimited financial resources, both from an athletic department standpoint as well as an NIL standpoint. They're in the SEC conference. I think it was an easy decision for him to say, the grass is greener there for me. And it wasn't about more money for him, because compensation wise, I don't know that A&M is going to pay him a whole heck of a lot more than we were willing to pay him, because we had shown great commitment to him with a new athletic director contract for him that would have kept him at Nebraska through like 2030. You know, I mean, he was locked in, so to speak, right? So that was not the issue. The issue was, you know, Trev behind the scenes was displeased with the fact that he wasn't getting the priority and the attention that he felt he needed at a very critical time in collegiate athletics. I mean, if you listen to Trev Albers talk at all over the last 3 to 5 months, almost every interview he ever had, and he was on the radio, you know, with a weekly radio show, he was talking about how, you know, this time right now is one of the most critical junctures for athletic departments and NCAA athletics, period, that there's ever been, right? Like, this is a monumental moment that it exists right now. And those who make the right choices and embrace it and embrace the change that's happening, then by golly, you know, they're going to end up in a great spot. Those that don't are going to get left in the dust.
Yeah,
and that was very clearly his opinion.
Right. Well, I don't think he's wrong about that. Between all the changes with NIL, transfer portal, and then, you know, the consolidation of the leagues, right? And this talk about like a super league, you know, of like the Big Ten, the SEC, and all that sort of stuff. But I recall, because I did, you know, look online at some of the, you know, Reddit and news articles and things like that. And there were a lot of fingers being pointed at the Board of Regents, who are obviously the ones in charge of hiring him in the first place. Also in terms of hiring the president, because President Carter, who had been at Nebraska for quite some time, was announced that he was leaving back in the summer of last year, of 2023, though he did not depart until basically the end of that year or the very beginning of 2024. But in that time, the Board of Regents was not able to find a replacement for him, so we still have an interim president at Nebraska. And we also had the chancellor of the university depart as well. So to have, you know, three major people at the university all leave within, you know, a 9-month period or so, not necessarily a great look. And it sounded like, from what I was reading, that Trev was trying to get funding for this renovation of the stadium, you know, that he was really pushing for, but without having a, you know, firm president in place who usually is kind of in charge and helps lead a lot of those fundraising events and things like that for the school, that he was kind of having to do more of that himself and kind of fight amongst the other departments and programs at the university who want their own money and their own fundraising. And like you say, he felt that, you know, even though athletics is so important to the state of Nebraska and the university in general, that he wasn't getting, you know, the priority treatment that he felt he should have been getting.
Right. And he felt like it was such a critical time, right? Like, it wasn't something that he could just say, okay, I get it. We just need to let this process play out, and then when everything stabilized again, then we'll go after it again. But he had invested enough of his own time in trying to kind of get things organized. Now, to be critical a little bit of Trev, I'll do that, because I obviously just praised him with his overall results. The fact is that, you know, we still haven't opened our new, you know, collegiate athletic facility, the Tom Osborne Legacy Complex, which was just named, by the way, today, or not today, but recently. Basically, you know, they just recently got into the weight room, right? During spring practice was the first time, or just a few weeks maybe before spring practice began, did they open the weight room for the football players. There are still a couple of floors, some of the offices, the coaches' offices, some of the other teams other than football's facilities that are in that building or going to be in that building are not finished yet. And that thing was supposed to be done before last football season began, right? So it's really a year late, a year and a half in some areas, and it's still not done. It may not get done until next football season. Like at the beginning of this coming football season, 2024, I'm not sure that building's going to be completely done.
Right.
And frankly, that's an athletic department. It's a huge deal. And when, you know, in today's environment, Alex, if it's not done, the clock is ticking and so is the dollar bills. I mean, everything gets more expensive. Every day that that's not finished, that's more money that it's costing to finish that facility. And that's not a good thing. Okay. I feel like from a Regent standpoint, you got to understand this maybe from a broader perspective than just athletics. From the Regent standpoint, you know, they're dealing with a lot of issues all at the same time. On the academic side, like many institutions, Nebraska is battling funding issues in one reason, because their enrollment is declining, which is happening to quite a few institutions, not all institutions, but quite a few institutions, especially institutions in small population states that are losing or having trouble retaining population. And, you know, brain drain in the state of Nebraska is an issue because there just aren't enough, you know, high paying like technology and professional jobs to retain all the people in the state. You know, a lot of the kids who graduate from Nebraska don't stay there, right?
Right.
So that's a problem for the state. You know, are we producing the kind of people that we need to supply the state's needs, which is primarily agriculture and business, not, you know, lawyers and doctors and, you know, other IT types of right. I mean, we don't. So it's figuring all that out. You also have budget constraints from the state, because the entire state is also challenged in that way. And you've got a current leadership in the governor's mansion that really wants to streamline government, minimize government's involvement. So they're not about, you know, spending willy-nilly. Now, the reality is they just agreed to the largest, you know, budget for education in history of the state. But in the eyes of the academic institution, UNL, University of Nebraska, it's not enough, right? And it's a critical juncture right now, Alex, because of, you know, the AAU accreditation that we've talked about in the past on this podcast, and the fact that we got kicked out of that institution because of how they defined research dollars, and they wouldn't allow us to identify the medical center's research dollars as part of the university system at UNL, because it's under the definition of University of Nebraska Omaha. And so, you know, there's just a lot of wheels in motion for them to deal with. And all that played into, you know, the athletic department's request to do the largest single project in the history of the state of Nebraska. Okay, that's to give you some perspective. I mean, we were asking to build something, and the price tag that was being presented was $450 million, $500 million, right? And the reality is by the time that thing got built and was completed, it would probably be somewhere around $600 billion, so more than $500 million. Well, that's no small amount, right? Especially when you're trying to raise those funds in the now NIL era, where
right.
would you rather have $500 million available to spend on getting the best athletes you could? Or would you want those donation dollars to go to building a renovated South Stadium, right?
Right.
And I get that, you know, that question is not fair and is kind of short-sighted. The reality is South Stadium is a piece of junk. It needs to be renovated. It needs to be updated. But does it have to be updated to the tune of $500 million?
Right. Well, and not to mention, like you said, you've got this other massive construction project with the Tom Osborne facility that's right. You know, going over schedule. And so you're trying to, you know, get that wrapped up while you're also trying mm-hmm. to get funds for this other, even bigger project. So I can see the
right.
the problem there.
Right. And rather than him showing some patience for his employer, who had already sent him the best, strongest signal they possibly could, by giving him an extension on his contract as athletic director through like the end of the decade, right? and making him one of the highest paid athletic directors in the Big Ten and therefore the country, instead of him seeing that and recognizing that I need to chill my wheels here and just relax and understand that there's lots going on and just, you know, continue to persist in my leadership and we'll eventually get there. He decided, nope, you know what? I can see too many roadblocks here. You know, my mentor's gone. And now I am going to go over here to Texas A&M. And there's all kinds of things at play here that we could get into. I mean, there's relationships between Texas A&M's president and Admiral Carter, okay, who's now at Ohio State. And so they were best buddies. So I guarantee you, because Admiral Carter has a great opinion of Trev and believes that Trev is one of the best ADs in the country, but his athletic director role was just replaced. He just got a new athletic director at Ohio State before he took his job, right, at Ohio State. So he's not going to be able to hire Trev, but his good buddy down there at A&M is, right? Because right. Now he has a need. So bam. I mean, there's, you know, one guy talks to another guy. That's where having relationships, you know, I talk to you all the time, Alex, about the importance of building your network, about having contacts and always nurturing and working hard to build those relationships. And it's for exactly those reasons. That's why Trev got that opportunity, because of the network of relationships that he had. And it was presented to him. Now here's the cautionary tale that I want to give Trev Albers. He is like the fourth athletic director in the last 10 years at Texas A&M. Now, one of those athletic directors at least left A&M to take another job. But I believe two of them, maybe it is two, two left on their own. One got fired. Okay. And they're notorious for sending their people out on a rail after they fall out of favor, right? And Trev can try all he wants to talk like a Texas A&M grad and speak like a Texan, but it ain't gonna work, right? He is gonna be a fish out of water for quite some time, and if he rubs enough people the wrong way down there, they'll dump him, right? There's no loyalty there, and right. He might find himself on the wrong side of that train real quick. So I hope he made the right decision for he and his family and that he ends up having great success. But I don't think it does not come without risk going into that cult-like institution, because A&M is it's a very great school. It's a great engineering college, but it is a weird and cult-like existence. I mean, those people still wear uniforms. They are very different than most any other school in the Power Five.
Okay. Now, to the Board of Regents' credit, after we kind of, you know, threw some shade their way earlier, they did replace Trev pretty quickly and were able to secure Troy Dannon, who was the athletic director at Washington. So now he's come over to Nebraska, and this is what I referred to in our previous podcast, where I kind of feel bad for Washington in that they've lost their head coach of football and their athletic director in like a 3-month period after, you know, getting second in the nation, right, in the national championship right. game. So it's kind of a tough blow for them.
It is. And you know, I can be as I have to be fair, I have to look at Troy and say, okay, he's literally, he was in at Washington for like a year. Like maybe a little more than a year. I mean, he was not athletic director there for very long. Now, he was there long enough to replace DeBoer, right? So he made a replacement he made some critical hires for that institution before he left, right? So in that 1 year period of time, he had done some significant things, but, and he had also been very successful and had stayed for a much longer period of time at some of the previous institutions that he had been at. And the thing about Troy is he is a Heartland guy. He's an Iowan. He's from Iowa. He was the AD at Northern Iowa for quite a while. So he is from the area. He's got family here. His wife is from the you know, that Western Iowa area. So he's coming home. So his incentive or choice to come to Nebraska had, I think, as much to do with family and his level of comfort as it did money or prestige or any of that sort of stuff. And so it's a little bit different set of circumstances than Trev, who was supposedly leaving his dream job, right? This was, he was talking about how important the University of Nebraska and such was to him when he arrived, when Trev arrived. So I'm excited for Troy, but I'm not prepared to say, oh, I think he's going to be a better AD than Trev was or anything like that. I'm not there.
Right. I just looked it up. So you're right. He was at Northern Iowa for 7 years as an AD, and then at Tulane for 8 years, and then 1 year at Washington.
Right.
So you're correct in that, you know, he's clearly a ambitious guy, but he has shown, you know, faithfulness, I guess you could say, to some of his past universities well.
And he's been very successful, Alex. I mean, he has built the programs you just described to their highest level of success. He made them better than when he arrived, right?
Right.
And he is highly respected. He's been involved in a lot of committees at the NCAA level, at the college football level. So he is an up and coming athletic director within the nation. So for Nebraska to get him, frankly, was a great get. And the fact that they did it so quickly is equally impressive. And one final note about the Ted Carter departure. Just so you know, they have named basically a president in waiting, right? That there's a process they have to go through. So there's a period of time. It's almost like president-elect kind of thing, right? And then it'll eventually happen. But the guy that they named him in a time frame that was shorter than the process of replacing that they took to get to Ted Carter. So it really wasn't out of the realm of what had historically happened. Now, that doesn't mean that it's right that it takes you 7 months to replace your president, you know, but in this day and age of bureaucracy and having to cross all your T's and dot all your I's to make sure that you're not, you know, going to regret a choice because of something like, social media firestorm that you don't want to deal with. This was a typical hiring sequence.
Right. And I listened to a interview with Matt Rule, which we'll talk about a little bit later. It was on the Bussin' with the Boys YouTube channel with Will Compton as one of the hosts. And he asked Matt about Trev's departure. You know, and Rule obviously talked about how Trev had been good to him and, you know, given him the funding he felt he needed, you know, to get a good staff and things of that nature. But he also mentioned that he knows Troy personally and seemed to be comfortable with the change up, you know, admitting to the fact that, you know, in the sporting world, you know, people come and go, you know, that's kind of the way of it. And so he, you know, kind of saw it in that light.
Right. Yeah. Well, and you know what? That's exactly what I needed. I needed for Matt Rule to say publicly. I'm sure in a private and completely honest moment, he might express a little more concern and be a little bit more, edgy on the fact that he came to Nebraska and that the two people that he spoke of most highly and that were the two most influential people in getting him to say yes to Nebraska are both gone. And that's Ted Carter and Trev Albers. Right. And so, but he has made it very clear in all his public statements that, hey, I didn't come here and I committed to the University of Nebraska and its football program. I didn't commit to Trev Albers or Ted Carter. Right. So I'm here because I want to be here and this is where we want to be for a long, long time. So he tried to smooth the waters rather quickly on that.
Right. Well, he's probably been around long enough now to know how Nebraska fans are and that they'll, you know, crawl themselves up walls, you know, worrying.
Yes,
and
exactly.
Coming up with the conspiracy theories.
Well, and here's the reality. I just accept the fact that if the right job came open, that there is a reasonable chance that Matt Rhule is going to leave us, right? Now, if he's leaving us for one of those prime jobs, that means he's had success here at Nebraska.
Right.
And if he's brought us to where we are having a level of success that we haven't had in 20 years, then by golly, hopefully we'll be smart enough to hire from within and maybe pick up one of his staff who is the right up and comer, whether it's a guy like Tony White or somebody else on the staff, and make him our next head coach. Right. So I'll worry about that bridge when it comes.
Right.
But I'm not dumb enough to think that if the Penn State job came open, or that if the University of Texas job came open or something like that, that Matt Rhule wouldn't be considered if he was having success at Nebraska, and that there wouldn't be a good probability that he would go to one of those institutions.
Right. Especially Penn State, right? We know that's his alma mater. You know, he's got a lot of love for that university.
Exactly. Yeah. Yep. Well, and he loves Texas too because of all the high school football there.
Right. So switching off of the Trev Albers news, we're going to talk briefly here about some updates in regards to Nebraska's two basketball teams, men and women, as well as volleyball news before we get into the football news. We kind of teased in our previous podcast about the big victory that the men's basketball team had recently had back in January, which was of course the Nebraska basketball team beating number one ranked Purdue 88-72, which was a big deal. You know, the fans and you know all the players rushed the court after it was over. You know, it was a big celebration. Matt Rhule himself was there in the crowd, you know, celebrating with the players and things like that. So that was a pretty historic win for Nebraska basketball, and we did well enough to make it to the NCAA tournament for both the men's and the women's. Now, the men went out in the first round of the tournament, and the women went out in the second round. So, you know, it would have been great to see us go on a Cinderella run. It wasn't destined to be, but it is a good step for Fred Hoiberg, the coach of the men's basketball team, and a sign for hopeful success in the future. Although I know that with some of the transfer portal news, that's a little bit in question.
Right. That's the thing. I, you know, it's very much up in the air what kind of team Nebraska is going to have next year. This might have been a one-year, a sniff of success or reasonable success. I mean, we did end up being, the top four in the Big Ten this year. So we got a double bye in the Big Ten conference tournament. So that was good. But we lost, you know, obviously some of our key seniors are gone, but then we lost a ton of players to the portal, including most of our freshmen. Right. So that's a little frightening to me that the guys who had literally just arrived on campus already have abandoned the Fred Hoiberg program and decided to move on, especially since you're a freshman. You had older guys ahead of you. We're still dealing with COVID years at this point. You know, something else has to be the thing that's driving you to go to other institutions. And it can't just be playing time, right? Because if you were frustrated that you weren't getting more playing time when, you know, the team you had was one of the best teams Nebraska's had in quite some time, you have to have, as an athlete, a reasonable patience to recognize that, hey, those guys are going to graduate and then it's going to be my turn. Right. I'm just going to keep fighting it. And, you know, if there's good culture within the basketball program, I would think that would happen, but it didn't. So I am calling out the red siren and saying, I think there's an issue here. And I'm not convinced Fred has this thing going in a positive direction, even though I loved watching Nebraska volleyball or Nebraska basketball for the first time in a long time this year because they played hard. They played good defense most of the time. There were certainly lapses, but they played really hard. And I just love the demeanor of the team. It was fun to watch, with Tominaga, the Japanese player who you know, captured really a national attention because of his personality and talent. And he's gone, of course. He's graduated and gone. But I will be curious to see what the roster looks like here in another 2 months.
Right. Now, I know that to kind of offset this kind of worrying news of people going into the portal, it's also already been announced that we have several transfers coming in, which some fans are excited about. They seem to be, you know, pretty good players. So it's possible right. that some of that portal departure was because, I heard that coach is bringing in these other guys over me and I don't like that. So I'm just going to head out now rather than try to tough it out.
I don't think because these players that he's now picking up are not guys that were in the portal when those people left. Right. So they didn't know that there was going to be this portal departure. Okay. The players didn't. Right. So the players were leaving unilaterally. They were leaving because they, for whatever reason, didn't think or didn't like the situation they had in Lincoln. And that's why I throw up the red flag, saying I think there's something amiss here. This is not normal. This does not reflect a good team culture, in my opinion.
Right.
And so I'll be curious to see after the dust settles, curious to see what the status of the team is in terms of talent level and how much we lost versus how much we gained. Because I just really worry that we got some kind of an issue, and maybe the issue is we don't have enough NIL money for basketball.
Right.
That could very well be it. And these people are just leaving for a bigger paycheck in this day and age. I really don't know, you know? So, and if that's the case, then that might not have anything to do with culture. What I do know is this: Nebraska still has one of the best facilities in the Big Ten for its basketball training facilities. They play in an absolutely beautiful arena in Pinnacle Bank Arena. They travel in very nice in environments. They get an awful lot of amenities. They are treated very well at the University of Nebraska. So why would you walk away from that? Like one of the freshmen who's from Omaha, if I remember correctly, who left the program, just announced today, is going to Loyola Marymount. Okay. Now Loyola Marymount has a history of great basketball. Don't get me wrong, but they're not the University of Nebraska from a resources standpoint, an NIL standpoint, and those kinds of things. So I would be shocked if that young man is getting a lot more money or is going to be treated better with more quality and recovery, you know, facilities and things like that, like he would have had if he had stayed at Lincoln. So why did he leave? You know, these are questions that run through my head.
Yes. Well, and my only final comment is, you know, we talk a lot about the transfer portal in the football world because that's our main focus. But in many ways, it's even more chaotic and, you know, table turning for these other sports like basketball or volleyball, right, with a smaller roster, you know, because if five players transfer out on a football team, you know, and, you know, depending on if they're stars or not, you know, that's significant, but it, you know, it's not the end of the world, right? You've got, you know,
right. It's 5 out of 85,
right? 85 scholarship players, but on a, you know, basketball team or a volleyball team, you know, that's nearly half your squad right there.
Right.
So an individual departure or more, you know, really starts to add up in those circumstances.
Right. And you can almost expect again, two or so, to leave every year now. I think two or three is probably a number that we're going to have to get used to. But when you're seeing five or six, which is what we had this year, that to me is a red flag. And so we'll see what Fred does. I like Fred Hoiberg as a coach. I think he's kind of found himself and is finding the right rhythm of the kind of offense and defense he needs to run to be successful in the Big Ten. And he has a nucleus of players that are older, that are likely to stay and be the nucleus of the team next year. And he needs to put a few pieces around that, and he'll have a top five or six players that are going to be pretty good and, you know, could do some good stuff for us. But I don't know how long, you know, you have a couple of injuries and you're in trouble unless you get some more talent.
And now we'll talk briefly about volleyball. Obviously, they've been in the off season for quite a while here, but there's also been some news on that front in terms of transfer portal. For example, Allie Batenhorst is leaving the team. So I know you're more tuned into the volleyball side of things than basketball. So what have been your reactions to the news there?
Well, you know, now this is a little bit different. I mean, this is still quite a few departures, right? We had three girls leave a team that had no seniors. So there was the possibility that everybody would return. But then we had three people announce their departures. Two of them were kind of unexpected. One was Maggie Mendelson, who had been at Nebraska for 2 years and was a middle blocker who had been competing for time, but had seen a freshman come in this year, Andy Jackson, come in and basically take the starting middle blocker role. And so Maggie was kind of destined to be a backup for her remaining 2 years of eligibility, unless there was an injury, right? And she's a competitive gal. In fact, Maggie was not on a volleyball scholarship. She was on a basketball scholarship for Nebraska because she was also on the basketball team. So she was a dual sport athlete in two sports that occur back to back, and it's a very unusual combination, right? It just doesn't happen very often where a player does both at the same time. And Maggie had attempted to do that for 2 years, and she wasn't having much success on the basketball team either. She was getting scrub time, and that was about it. So she made the decision to go full time with volleyball, and Nebraska didn't have a scholarship for her in that situation, right? Because they were reaping the benefit of the women's basketball team being the counting sport. Okay, if you're playing two sports, your scholarship is only counted by one of those sports, and there's a hierarchy of which sport gets the count. Does that make sense? Okay, so women's basketball is higher in that hierarchy than women's volleyball. So Nebraska was reaping the benefit of Maggie's presence and her, you know, her efforts and her ability to support the team and play, even though we weren't having to consume one of our scholarships for that. Does that make sense? So I get it. Once she made the decision she wanted to devote exclusively to volleyball, then we don't have a scholarship necessarily for her. And so she went into the portal. Okay. Now, the one that was unexpected and the one that hurts us is Caroline Juravicius, who was one of the top 20 recruits in the country. She is the daughter of a longtime NFL football player from Ohio. She was highly recruited and was our future at outside. She was a true freshman. She came in with Andy Jackson and all the other ones, you know, Harper Murray. But Caroline had ended up redshirting this year. But she's still a freshman. And she would have been able to play this year behind Merritt Beeson at right side, and then potentially had the opportunity to be the right side for Nebraska for 3 years. But she opted to go to Penn State, where her dad went to school, right, and was an All-American. So that's the one that hurts. That's the one that was probably unexpected, and that's the one that hurts. Now, the Allie Batenhorst one is more of a thing where now, because those Maggie and Caroline left, then a player came into the portal who was a player of the year for the Big Ten Conference in 2022. And she put herself into the portal and had 2 years of eligibility left. Nebraska chose to recruit her. And I think that drove Allie to at least look at her future options, because she now read the writing on the wall that John was wanting to bring in some more competition for the outside hitting position. Because we weren't happy with the kind of turnstile that we had at that outside hitter position this year on the team. And so he did it. And rather than stay and compete, Allie's looking at it and saying, hey, I want to play beach volleyball on a legitimate beach volleyball team, because she thinks maybe that might be her future rather than indoor volleyball. So she's going to go to USC and play her final year of both indoor volleyball and beach volleyball this next year. And she's graduating this spring. And so she was going to get a master's degree and USC has the well good program for what she wants. So it's just a natural fit. It's time for her to move on. And that has all been very amicable and almost planned, right? Like, she's still practicing with the team. She played with the beach team this year. So, you know, she's no harm, no foul.
Right.
So, but that's a lot of turnover. So then we got her name's the new player is Taylor Lanfair. Again, one of the top players in the country. Had a down year, though, last year. Did not duplicate her MVP year, right? And was dealing with a new coach at the University of Minnesota where she is. And she also is graduating this spring. So she can't transfer. She can't come to Nebraska until the summer. So that's an interesting dichotomy, okay? Lanfair wasn't able to do anything with their team. Hasn't been able to practice. You know, I don't even know if she's been given access to the weight facilities, you know, the training room and stuff, where Allie has been given carte blanche. She's been a part of the volleyball program this whole semester, you know, traveled to Hawaii and, you know, LA and Louisiana and Florida and all these places with the sand team, and is going to practice with the team all the way up until the spring game, the final game of spring for spring practice of the volleyball team, which is May 4th. And she may or may not play in that game. I don't even think they've decided yet. So depends on if somebody's injured or whatever, and they need Allie to play to create two teams. You know what I mean?
Right.
But I don't think she's going to play in that game, but she's going to practice with the team all the way up until that. So that's two different ways that two different universities handled a transfer student or a transferring student.
Right.
So I have to give John credit for that. So that's why I wanted to mention it on the podcast.
Yes. Well, yes, we know John Cook is a class act.
Well, no, most people think he's the devil incarnate. I'm serious. He is despised by volleyball fans across this country for a bunch of stupid reasons. John is a little odd. He's eclectic, and he sometimes says things that are on his mind when, you know, if cooler heads prevailed, he would realize it was dumb for him to say it, right? And he's intensely competitive, and that comes out sometimes in a negative way for a women's sport, right? For a woman's sport, it's just, it doesn't come across as well.
Right.
So he's not the most well-liked guy. I have great admiration for him, though. And I think he's great. So we also have a middle blocker, Layla Blackwell, who because of the Maggie Mendelson departure, we needed a middle blocker, because right now we only have two. We now got Layla Blackwell, who is a returning all-conference player, has just 1 year of eligibility left, was looking, you know, graduating and looking for another school to play for, played on the San Diego State team or University of San Diego team that played in the national championship, not this past season, but the season before.
Okay.
So, very good player.
All right. Yep. Well, we'll see, obviously, how the volleyball team does. I don't think we'll be covering their spring game in the same intensity that we will the football team, but we'll obviously keep an eye on them. You know, in that Busted with the Boys YouTube thing I mentioned, they also talked with Heinrich Harburg, and he's dating Harper Murray on the volleyball team. And, you know, the Will Compton asked them, like, oh yeah, how does it feel, you know, that Nebraska's a volleyball school, right? You know, more than a football school, you know. And he's like, oh yeah, you know, but we're getting there, you know, we'll take it back, share the spotlight, right? You know, I'm happy for them, but it's our turn now, or something like that, which I thought was fun.
Right. That is.
Yes. Speaking of, that's time to get to the main topic, which is the Nebraska football team. And on the previous podcast, obviously, at that time, we already knew about some of the big transfers, like Dylan Raiola coming to Nebraska as our quarterback and things of that nature. You know, the main signing day had passed, but the transfer portal was still open. So we were still going after some people at the time. I know we were able to secure at least two pretty good wide receivers kind of off the back of us locking down Dylan, because obviously his prestige helped with that, you know, knowing that you're going to be playing with a five-star quarterback. But in the end, how do you evaluate where we ended up, both in terms of our main signed recruiting class and the transfer portal we were able to secure?
Well, I would say this. We were as good as I could have reasonably expected us to be, given the fact that we were coming off, you know, the fourth year in a row of under 500 seasons, right? We were 5-7 last year, didn't go to a bowl game, haven't gone to a bowl game in quite some time. If you take into account our performance on the field over the last half decade, then what he pulled off, what Matt Rhule pulled off, was exceptional. Because not only did he get what I think is a really good group of young athletes that are going to be the core of our future team, but he was also able to do a pretty decent job of identifying some areas that needed some help, right? Like the wide receiver room, which because of some injuries and then departures, because of graduating seniors and such, was a room that was going to be really, really too young this coming season if we hadn't gotten some guys who we could fill in there and help balance out the experience in that room. And we were able to get that accomplished. I would say the one thing that we didn't get accomplished in the portal was I think we would have liked to have gotten another legitimate big defensive tackle, a guy that could play, you know, in the middle, and do some nose and you know, one technique and three technique and all the stuff inside, and be a big boy, like a 310 pound type of dude, and we weren't able to get that done. So that's probably my criticism of our portal and recruiting classes. We didn't get anybody on that, in that premier, you know, difference maker level at defensive tackle. But pretty much everywhere else, I thought we did very good in terms of filling our needs and balancing our roster. But we are now in the same boat we were last year, where we're a good 10 to 12 players above the scholarship limit. Now, in this new age of NIL, where you have some NIL dollars that you can play some games with and, you know, get some people converted, you know, some of the guys who maybe are going to graduate this spring that we could convert to NIL money, where they go off of scholarship because they're done with their 4 years and they're graduated, and then give them an NIL package that makes it in their interest to continue to be on the team, right? And that gets us back down to that 85 limit. And I suspect after our spring game here coming up in about a week, we will see departures of 5 to 10 players. Some of them will be like, yep, that guy needed to go. He was in the wrong spot on the depth chart and probably wasn't going to be able to climb above the players ahead of him. And then we'll probably have one or two that we really, really would have liked to have had stayed that will leave anyway, because for whatever reasons, right?
Right.
I think that's been the recent history. So we'll just have to accept that. But I feel like as a roster, I think coach has done a great job of putting us in a position where this next season, we're going to have some pretty decent depth in all spots, except probably quarterback, right? And defensive tackle. I think we are, you know, one or two injuries away from a critical situation in both of those areas, where at running back, I think we're four or five deep with guys that are capable of being a pretty solid Big Ten football player, right? None of them are All-American at this point, but are they capable of getting the job done in the Big Ten? Yes, they are. Wide receiver, I think because of the additions we did this year and some of the young talent we have, I think we're in really good shape in the wide receiver room. And then, you know, our defensive backfield's in pretty darn good shape too. Linebacker, we're a little bit thin, but the frontline guys are going to be the leaders of our team. So as long as we don't have a lot of injuries there, we're going to be in pretty good shape there. And remember, we're a team that we were top 15 defense, and we got a lot of players coming back from that top 15 defense.
Yep. Well, yeah, my thoughts, listening to you talk there, are similar in that my main concern is the quarterback room, because on the one hand, that was one of our primary weaknesses last year, right? If we had had, you know, a solid quarterback that could throw the ball well enough to make it a real threat, you know, and have defenses have to respect it, you know, along with a running game, then we probably would have gone bowling, right? I feel pretty confident in saying
that. Yeah.
But
I think you're right.
You know, with the inconsistent quarterback play, you know, being somewhat one-dimensional, and then the turnover issues that were rampant, those really hit us in the foot prevented us from getting over the hump there. Now we have Dylan Raiola, you know, Harburg returning as the more experienced guy, and then Danny Kalen, another younger guy, in the quarterback room. We've got the talent, and we've got, you know, quarterbacks with Danny and Dylan that should be those difference makers and should be able to make us be able to throw the ball more effectively, you know, and do those things that we were not able to do last year. But like you say, we're one bad hit away from being back in a similar situation to last year, right, where we're in a crisis mode in the quarterback room.
Exactly. And so I would have loved to have seen us pick up a fourth quarterback.
Right. And I think we speculated about that a little bit on the last podcast, whether Coach would go for that or not.
And he may still, you know, if a quarterback with a talent level that they like shows up in the portal here in the next 2 weeks, and then Coach might make a run at him.
Yeah. Or defensive tackle, like you said, like those are kind of the two areas we're really still looking for.
Yeah.
But talking about that spring game that's coming up next week, that's, you know, obviously there's going to be a lot of excitement because we've got Dylan playing. That'll be our first time seeing him, you know, for real. And he's brought a lot of excitement to the team this year, you know, being the top quarterback recruit from last year's class and all that sort of stuff. So I'll be excited to see how he plays as well. But of course, you know, I think as always, Nebraska fans have to kind of temper their expectations, right? He's only been in the program, you know, for a few weeks here, you know, actually practicing and everything. And we'll have to wait and see in terms of our overall evaluation. Because I remember the one from last year, we saw some positive signs on the defense, but definitely some worry points on the offense, you know, and it wasn't a very high scoring game. And we know that the defense is kind of the strength of our team. So we kind of expect that at this point. But seeing how the offense has adjusted, and if our coordinator has, you know, adjusted his play calling a bit to kind of suit the new roster that he has, those are the areas I'm really going to be watching out for.
Yeah, I think that's a good summary, Alex, in terms of what to watch for in the spring game. I would tweak it just a little bit. I would say that, you know, since this is year two, you know, last year, I mean, Coach Rhule was all about just doing a full game, you know, being physical, play, let's do this thing, you know, where this year he's been way, way more strategic about who's getting reps in practice. And they've done some really unique things that have gotten people lots and lots of reps during the spring so far. But they've also been holding out a lot of guys. Like they just had one of their major scrimmages. You can only have three during the spring, and they just had their first one here last weekend, last Saturday. They're going to have one again tomorrow. And then the final one will be the spring game. In that first scrimmage last Saturday, there were like five or six guys that were either starters last year or significant contributors to the defense that were all held out. Not because they're necessarily injured per se, but they maybe were coming off of some, you know, postseason surgery, and they're given the green light to practice, but coach is being very selective about their reps, right? That's something he didn't do last year. Because he didn't know the players. Now he knows what he's got. And so I think you're going to see that carry over. I think probably a good third, if not half, of our starting defensive players probably won't even play in the spring game, or if they do, they'll play a very limited role. I think the spring game is going to be about demonstrating the development and emergence of our depth. And I expect actually the offense to be more successful than they were last year, and for a couple of reasons. I think they want. I think it makes sense for them to maybe simplify the defense, because again, a lot of the mature defensive players might not even be playing, and so they're going to have to simplify that defense a little bit. And in so doing, it's going to then open it up for the new, more accurate quarterbacks to throw that ball around. So I would be shocked if we don't see a better performance from a throwing standpoint and just in general offense being more efficient. Now, the big question mark is, are we going to have the turnover problem? Is that persisting, or has that been addressed?
Yes, I'm definitely very concerned about that one as well. One fun thing, listening to some of these interviews that I saw on YouTube, one was with Dylan Raiola, another was with Heinrich Harburg. They also talked with Matt Rhule, but they asked the guys, and Matt actually, a little bit about this spring league thing that Matt has been doing this year, which is a little unique, where basically the three quarterbacks, you know, that we mentioned earlier, each have their own squad of players, that they run their offenses, and they're actually competing against the other teams. So, you know, Harburg's running one, Raiola's got another one. They've got names based off like the old mascot names from past years of Nebraska football.
Right.
But they don't play each other in like full games, but they play situations. It's like, you know, third down and, you know, 15, or you're in the red zone or whatever. And then they play against each other, and whoever comes out on top gets points. And those points over the course of a week get determined. And then there's like a general manager, and there's trading of players. So it's a whole little complicated thing. But it seems like the guys have really gravitated to it. You know, they're having fun with it, they're being competitive. You know, I think it's been a way for him to involve some of those players you mentioned who maybe aren't as being as physical because they've got some sort of nagging injury, but maybe they're the, you know, general manager, right? And they'll get on, you know, somebody's butt about like, you're not pulling your weight here, man, get to it,
right? It's a great way to build that that internal team accountability, so the coaches don't have to do it,
right? Which we've talked about in the past under Scott Frost. We talked about that quite a bit, right? Wanting, you know, building that culture where the players step up, you know, player steps up to kind of be the team leader, right. Which has been hard for us to cultivate in the past, you know, decade or so, because, you know, we've struggled so much that it's hard for like the older guys to kind of command that respect from the younger guys.
Exactly.
But although obviously Dylan is a really young guy, you know, true freshman and everything, but if he proves himself, you know, on the field to be what we all hope he can be, I'd like to think that he could become that kind of leader for the team.
Right. Well, and so I'm going to make a statement here, and we can maybe you'll be able to play this back and either laugh at me or call me a genius, depending on how this goes. But here's the thing. Dylan is a freshman, and so is Danny, right? And they're both very physically. You got to keep in mind, Danny Kaline was also at the Elite 11 camp for the high school senior quarterbacks last year. So he was highly regarded. He was a 4-star player coming out of high school. And he won the accuracy competition at the Elite 11 camp. Okay. One of the biggest problems we had last year was, of course, turnovers, interceptions, and bad throwing accuracy, the inability of our quarterbacks to put the ball where it needed to be, right? And Danny has had a pretty solid spring. I think, much like Dylan, the two of them, because they're freshmen, and this is, again, they're supposed to be high school seniors right now, both of them. Right. They're supposed to be going to prom. they're not supposed to be playing football with a collegiate football team with a bunch of 22 and 23-year-olds. So you got to understand that there lots of stuff's coming at them, right? The speed of the game is a whole different deal. And so you need to expect they're going to have growing pains, and they're not going to be as consistent, you know, play to play, drive to drive, game to game, as a player who's been around for a couple of years, right? So we as fans need to be patient with what we see, even in this spring game, because, you know, everyone's going to jump on the Danny versus Dylan thing. But my whole point is going to be, we just want to watch them get better. And that's the message Rule's been given the whole time. And he talks about Harburg too. And it's like, hey, you know, we need him as a quarterback. And everybody wants to make him into a tight end or something. And the fact is that he is a great athlete. He might very well be a great tight end. But the fact is, on our football team, we need him to be quarterback.
Yeah.
And I need him to become a better thrower and a more. So they've been working on his mechanics. They've been working to make him a better quarterback. So all three of those are fascinating players to watch in this upcoming game. And I'm here to tell you, Danny's going to end up being the guy that is talked about after this spring game. Not that they're going to say, I mean, the coaches aren't going to say anything about Danny's our starter or Dylan's our starter or Harburg's our starter or whatever. That determination is not even going to be discussed by the coaches, okay? But I guarantee you, after the game's over, Danny will have potentially performed as well as Dylan or very similarly, right? So that it is still going to be clear as mud which one of them is the likely starter.
Right. I was just going to add and say with the Harburg situation that making him a tight end, you know, that was a reasonable thing to consider and something we did do, you know, for the early games of last year when we had a quarterback room of like five people, right? But when you have three,
right,
you can't afford to have him be anything but a quarterback right now. So,
correct.
Yeah, he's got to stay in that position. And I'd like to think, you know, that now that he's had a full full spring, I should say, to improve on the areas that he was lacking in, you know, which he's, of course, is aware of, that
right.
He may be able to be, you know, not a superstar or anything, but a solid quarterback that we can rely on more. And we already know he's got great legs and is a tough runner and all those sorts of things.
Right.
Now that he knows that he's, you know, he played in more games for us last year than anyone else, right? You know, he led the team to many of our victories and all that. So, you know, I would hope that would build some confidence in him and, you know, kind of refine his focus on his quarterback fundamentals.
Right. Exactly. Well, and I just, you know, his maturity, he's a year older, you know, there's a chance that that's going to come into play here. So I would expect to see him perform quite well. Now the challenge is that the offensive play calling is evolving to more of what they want to do, which is not necessarily Heinrich's strength, right?
Right.
But that's the deal. I mean, he needs to learn how to throw the football and throw it accurately. So the question will be, does he throw some picks or does he underthrow some passes because he just does not have the arm strength that the other two guys have? Or has he risen to that level where he can do it consistently enough that he can move the team successfully down the field and score points? I'm just excited to see all the young talent. I'm just excited to see this team play some football and hoping that we see a team that continues to play hard like they did last year, you know, but with a little more discipline with regard to, you know, ball security and things of that nature. And if that happens, then I think I'm looking at a team that can win seven games.
Yep. Well, and one final thing I'll end on is from that Matt Rhule interview I read or listened to, you know, he talked about the 5-7 thing, right? How we were 5-3, you know, and looking like we were on the verge of going to a bowl game and then lost in our last stretch. And he talked about how that was kind of both a blessing and a curse, right? How,
right.
On the one hand, you know, losing those games, you know, kept the it frustrated the team, but it kept them focused. You know, they were, you know, very serious in their practice, and they knew that they had to try to get better to get that goal achieved that they had for themselves. Versus if, you know, you had won it, you know, and already gotten there, you know, maybe you back off a little bit and things of that nature. I think the downsides of losing those games are pretty obvious for team morale and perception and all those sorts of things. But from my perspective, yeah, the biggest reason that we did lose those games was because of quarterback play and turnovers in general. So if we see improvement on those two areas in the spring game, obviously it's not a science sealed and delivered, especially like you said, because a lot of the stars on the defense aren't expected to play. But that will be a good sign for me going into the summer and then fall practices that we have to look forward to.
Exactly. My general feel is that this team is deeper and more talented than any team we've had since probably Adrian Martinez's freshman year, Scott Frost's first year as coach, where Riley had actually put some talent on the team and then wasn't able to really take advantage of it. And then Scott was able to come in and use that talent to have some success, even though, you know, we just had such a devastating start to the season in that year. But Adrian still played well enough to be identified as a freshman All-American. I feel like this team that we have now is in a way better spot mentally and culturally, and yet is as talented or more talented than that team was. So if we're going to turn the corner, we're going to do it this year.
Right.
So
even though we've got a tough schedule,
we do have a tough schedule, but you know what? That's the new reality. That's going to be the case every year. I think, in fact, I would argue that the first 2 years of the schedule that's already been published, you know, not knowing exactly the dates and stuff on all of them, but knowing who we have on our roster to play, these first couple of years are going to be easier than the following years after that. So frankly, the next 2 years is going to be our time to make hay.
Yep. Very true. Very true. It doesn't get easier from here, as you say.
That's right.
But yeah, we'll be looking forward to watching that game. And of course, we'll come to you guys with a podcast in May, most likely on the results of that spring game and those transfers, you know, that we're expecting from the team, and kind of see where things shake out as a result. You know, maybe make some early predictions for what might come later down the line. We'll see. So thank you all out there for listening to this episode. You can reach out to us at HuskerPete13@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. You can give us ratings or reviews there. We always love hearing from the fans. So thank you for listening, and thank you, Dad, for joining me for this episode. And until next time, go Big Red.
Go Big Red.